702. 702. On 92.7. And 106 FM. Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DSTV channel 856.
Welcome back into the final stretch of Weekend Breakfast on 702. What a mighty fine time that we've been having together. Interesting discussion that we had there on extramarital entanglements. Someone WhatsApping in here, obviously wanting to remain anonymous, says, I've been involved in an extramarital entanglement and I now don't know how to get out of it. Oh, unfortunately, don't have much advice for you on that front, but yeah, we all have our battles, do we not? Send us your WhatsApp voice notes to 072-702-1702. Otherwise, you drop us an SMS on 31702, and you can always give us a call on 011-883-0702.
702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
One of my favorite parts of the show, Karabo Kholeng, our literary journalist, joins us now. Good morning and happy Saturday.
Good morning, Nikolaos. I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for the program.
Yeah. So, Karabo, this morning, you'd like to review All Grown Up by Jamie Attenberg. I understand that the book is a novel that provides a bit of a humorous take on how to deal with loss.
Yes. Well, Jamie Attenberg's novel is about the second coming of age, middle age, without having ticked the boxes of what constitutes the middle class good life. That means a career satisfaction, a home of one's own, realizing the dreams of youth, a family with a chosen one outside of childhood relations, i.e. spouse and children. And it addresses a lot of the challenges that middle class 90s teenagers face as we begin to realize that our youth has been over.
It's a very tough realization when we eventually have to come to terms with that our youth is eventually gone.
Yes. So just to give you a bit of a background to the story, the protagonist, Andrea, drops out of high school after a confusing and consuming relationship with her mentor, and she moves back home, a process that she articulates as a reverse commute. And we meet her in the novel during the months that lead up to her 40th birthday. Everyone in her life appears to be handling the next phase successfully. Her best friend, a half-Trinidadian yoga instructor, Indigo, has married a wealthy man. Her musician brother is married to a glamorous Scandinavian magazine editor, Greta. And her social activist mother is entering her sunset years with grace, despite her father having died from a heroin overdose back in the 90s. And her boss, who is the same age as her, has climbed the corporate ladder, having scored a beautiful wife, kids, tennis in the summer, ski trips in the winter, and a boat to boot. Now, the closest thing to a relationship that Andrea develops is with her neighbor, a tax lawyer, Kevin, who is firm that they will never be together because he is black in America and she is white. But despite this, they have an ill-advised relationship. They end up sleeping together with disastrous results, even though Andrea reflects that lying down without our clothes on, we are all the same. About this interaction, she also says, I was a girl, but not his girl. He was a man, but not my man. In that way, we burned our love down. So it's also, you know, thinking about what could have been with the relationships that didn't turn out to be lasting or lifelong. Whether there was something wrong with me, something wrong with him, something wrong with the timing, or that destiny just simply wasn't on our side. Now, Andrea's failed ambitions as an artist see her drawing the Empire State Building every day while she lives in this score of an apartment. Yet one day, developers buy the lot across the road and slowly build this tower that blocks her view, and her life doesn't seem to be moving on. While her job as a graphic designer drains the color from her soul, and she medicates with alcohol and multiple futureless relations with unsuitable men. And then her brother's life begins to unravel when their child is born with a congenital defect. And this baby never becomes conscious and basically sleeps her way to death over 4 long years. So it's sad, happy, you know? It's an honest reflection about real life and a life imagined and what happens when all your plans in life turn out to be the plan B, plan C, or even a plan that you'd never even imagined before. And the issues of shame, self-doubt, feelings of failure, and growing up, how to grow up. And there are a bunch of my favorite quotes from Ben, where Greta and you know, her sister-in-law and Andrea meet for a drink. She decides to take a break away from husband and child because the brother has received it into his shack and is playing music, and he sells it over the internet. But all the musicians of his age are aging, right? And including the fans. So he's only able to sell one or two songs on the internet and doesn't really make a dent. So Greta is basically the breadwinner in the house, but they have this unconscious baby and their marriage falls apart, but they don't physically leave each other. And he just goes into this world of just weed and composing guitar, you know, guitar lyric after guitar lyric, but it never sort of really comes to life. So it's also about this life that never really blossomed of their child and as a result of their marriage, and they don't know how to move past it. And Greta sits with Andrea and she says, you know, is this part of being a grown-up, taking what you can get? Because it starts to become very clear that, you know, that that feeling that you had when you were young, that you had all these things open to you, you know, the world is at your feet, that this is rapidly changing. And what do you do? Where do you find happiness? And how do you change if certain habits that used to serve you no longer serve you anymore?
You know, as hardcore as this subject matter is, it's pertinent, relevant, and I think quite helpful during a time of COVID-19, especially as our fatality rate begins to peak in terms of the disease. The easiest way to try and come to grips with those very real life topics is to engage with them literally.
Yes. And, you know, it's an exercise that I've started doing, looking at, you know, reading books that are sad, funny about loss, you know, because I think, you know, humor and laughter are good for your immune system and your mental health. And there are many ways in which we do lose. Loss is an essential part of life. And I think artists help us to look at that and to find ways to deal with it, because the loss may be really obvious in terms of a pandemic like this one, where people are dying and they're dying at different ages. And we are forced to actually reckon with what kind of future we dare to imagine for ourselves, because we cannot give up hope. And then it also sort of brings us back to realize that, you know, loss turns out in different ways. And a lot of people experience this, especially when, you know, you've been sold a dream as a child or even as a nation. And our nation is is slowly growing out of that youth. And the reality of our coming of age, of middle age or close to middle age, you know, as a nation and even as a planet. I remember in the 1990s when the world was turning towards, you know, the new millennium. And even prior to that, this whole idea of 2001, A Space Odyssey. And there was a global imagination, particularly in the arts, about how far humanity would have progressed. That perhaps during this age of Aquarius would be an age of new beginnings, an age of realizing global peace and equality and good health, good life for all. And it is turning out to not be that. It feels dystopian. So we need to reach, you know, dig into ourselves, and thank goodness artists do that for us, so that we've got material to work with, where we have to find new ways to dig within ourselves and to interact with each other in a way that can bolster us against what we're facing, and to imagine a space of hope and to start being creative with what we have, and to accept the losses and to learn from the losses as we go through them. And to be grateful for the fact that, you know, one of the things that's great about being human is that we do have imagination. We are resourceful and we're able to make a plan. And I really prefer to hold on to that than to the onslaught of really bad news and chaos and negativity. If not because there is hope than rather because I want to stay sane and I want to stay alive and I have a right to feel joy. I think being joyful in the face of such chaos is itself an act of revolution. If not socially, then at least at a personal level.
Sure. I mean, nobody says it's going to be easy, though, especially if we're faced with the reality that so often seems stranger than fiction, right? Who would have guessed that just a year ago, not even a year ago, 3, 4, 5 months ago, that we would be living through the unprecedented times that we are? Do you think that that makes it a little bit more challenging to try and lose yourself in a book when really reality is stranger than fiction?
It depends on the book. We all have the things that help us, you know, cope with life. And I think that this is why it's so special that there's so many different types of genres, right? And for me, I enjoy novels about coming of age. I enjoy novels that deal with loss in a humorous way. And we do find humor. And I think losing yourself in a book is something that we deserve to do because it's exhausting to carry on with life right now. It wipes us all out. I think if anyone is operating at 60% right now, they're doing a phenomenal job. And I think there is no time like the present to actually lose yourself in a good book where you start to feel a sense of relatedness because we are so physically disconnected from each other. I think a great way to find connection is in art, in novels, in nonfiction, in worlds of ideas, in music, because also at an existential level, it's really kind of hitting us that each and every one of us is ultimately alone. Yet being human means that we can find other ways to feel a sense of connectedness with something outside of us, even if it's a story. You know, Nikolaus, it really helps. Reading this book for me was such a welcome break that I could go into another world and forget the now, even if it's just for a few hours. Because, yo, we need to give each other and ourselves a break for a couple of hours a day.
Yo, at the very
because
least.
There's nothing else we can do. At the very least. At the very least.
Now am I going to be marked down or receive penalty points for maybe engaging with something that is just absolutely frivolous fiction? I know of a friend, right, that has taken to rereading Enid Blyton from their childhood. They obviously have a lot more time in their hands than they once did a couple of months back. But, I mean, it's okay to just get involved in fiction that doesn't necessarily deal with the very meaty topics that we're trying to dissect today.
Look, why not? The way that I'm approaching, you know, this conversation with you, Nikolaus, is because we have serious people listening to us, right? And we're trying to be, you know, we are the people who are trying to lead in the world and find solutions. So obviously, you know, given the situation and the time for the slot is that I have to be serious about the issues. But the novel is hilarious. And there are a lot of things that you and I could relate to in terms of her experiences and awkwardness and the humor and, you know, being reckless but taking life seriously. And I think we all deserve to give that to ourselves. I've started another thing where I'm collecting books and novels that are not rated as sort of literary but are entertaining because we need that, you know. And a friend of mine on Twitter, well, we're not friends in real life, but we follow each other. She said, I want to hand in a resignation because I want to resign from being a black woman. And I said, honey, they don't accept that resignation. So I've been trying for years. So it's okay to be frivolous. You know, I started painting my nails even though I'm not going anywhere. And I watch soap operas, whatever it takes. Right now, what matters is survival. And reading All Grown Up is actually very, very entertaining. You know, I found myself exclaiming out loud and laughing and cringing along with her. And it's that kind of humor, because even comedy is about the absurdity of life. And it's about finding a kind of catharsis from the things that weigh us down. So I'm sure, I mean, even in the Famous Five, these kids are constantly chasing danger. They put their lives in danger in every single book, right? yet they come out on the other side. One of my favorite childhood reads is Ramona Quimby, and she's an 8 year old, and she has this older sister that she's always trying to impress and be in her space, but she figures out her life, and she's only 8. And another one of my favorites was Anastasia Krupnik, whose dad will never forgive her for breaking her Billie Holiday records. And I'd never heard of Billie Holiday until I read that when I was about 10 years old. You know, so it's good to sort of visit your favorite old things, but also to find the new things and to just enjoy that and just to feel life. Because right now, the grand narrative is death, pestilence over social upheaval, war, gender-based violence, and it's real. And giving ourselves time out to just enjoy the things that don't change everything right now. At least they change our internal world so that we can, you know, when we're done with enjoying ourselves, we can go back with refreshed energy and new energy to contend with life. And life has never been easy, Nikolaos. It's never been easy. It's just that now it's real and we can't run away from it. We can't go into our lagers and try and sort of party it away or whatever, because we are all facing it, and there's no way to turn away except through art.
So we've got a WhatsApp in here, and I hope you're ready for a compliment. Karabakhuleng is absolutely amazing. I look forward to her show every Saturday morning. The insights that she provides in literature are absolutely unrivaled. They want to know, though, how many hours a day do you actually devote to reading, Karabakhuleng?
I'm a full-time student, so I'm always reading. But what I enjoy about this particular, you know, Saturday morning is that it's the one time where I get to pick something that I think I can share with everyone that I enjoy. So usually my Fridays from lunchtime are when I delve into a book that I can share with everyone. But essentially, look, I start reading at 7 a.m. and I'm done at 10 p.m. That's my life. I've been doing this. It's been my career. It's what I do for a living, you know? And I like it. I like it. I really can't complain about it. There are worse ways to spend time. So I'm very grateful and I'm very lucky. And
there's only one question that remains then, Karabakhuleng. There's only one question that remains, right? When's your book coming out?
My book?
Yes, yours.
No, my calling is to give other people's work a public life.
Okay.
Maybe someone will write about me posthumously.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my calling. People ask me that a lot. And I'm like, no, my job in this life is to actually give other people's intellectual and creative and important work a public life. You know, I get the front row seat to creation.
Humble to boot as well. Karabakhuleng, our literary guru, thank you very much for your time and weekend breakfast.
Thank you so much, Nikolaos. Take care.
Karabakhuleng chatting to us about Jamie Attenberg's book that she's reviewing, deals with some very, very serious topics there.